I'm Marco Werman, and this is The World. Unless you're in the shipping business, you might not have heard of Tianjin until today. It's one of the world's busiest ports, not too far from Beijing, and last night, two massive blasts destroyed a large area of Tianjin. The catastrophe began as a fire at a warehouse that stored hazardous chemicals. Then came the first blast. People in nearby buildings took out their cell phones to record the scene. And while their phones were on, a second, more powerful fireball came from the warehouse. Yeah, you can hear the panic there. Chinese authorities say at least 50 people were killed. Hundreds more were injured. Fergus Ryan is in Tianjin for The Guardian. He was at the scene earlier today.
When I was at the site of the blast earlier today, I saw huge chunks of metal that had been stripped from shipping containers and had been flung over the highway that is on the western perimeter of the blast zone. And they had flown 500 meters to land jutting out of the ground. I saw underneath the highway scores of trucks and cars that were parked underneath the highway. All of the windows had been smashed and the vehicles were completely blackened. There was glass all over the ground. And I could see huge plumes of what started off as white smoke billowing out of the area, but then suddenly turned yellow at one stage.
So this place that exploded was part of the port. Do we know at this point about what caused the explosion?
That is still a mystery. The Chinese government gave a press conference, and they said at that press conference that they still don't know what the exact cause was, and the investigation is still underway.
So the flammable materials were being stored at this warehouse at the port. Do we know anything about the kinds of chemicals that were released in this explosion?
That is also something that we can't be certain of, but there have been at least many rumors flying about today, and that has caused concern for local residents as reports have been coming out that there might be cyanide and other such dangerous chemicals. Definitely when I was right up very close to the blast scene, there was a very acrid smell, and the color of the smoke coming out of the blast zone was unusual.
Were there any people in the building, in this warehouse, at the time of the explosion?
We are uncertain about that. What we do know is that firefighters who went to the scene after the initial explosions, many of those firefighters have died, and at least earlier today, many of them were also missing.
How are the local hospitals coping with all the injuries?
My first port of call when I arrived in Tianjin this morning at around 11 a.m. was to go to the Tenda Tianjin Hospital, and there were scenes of commotion. There were also scenes of goodwill. There were plenty of volunteers outside the hospital, and they had brought supplies, bottles of water, as well as food, watermelons, etc. And there were taxis who were taking victims and their families to and from the hospital for free.
Fergus, before I let you go, could you just give us a rough idea about Tianjin, the city? What is it like? I mean, we know it's a port. How big? How many people? And anything going on there economically besides the port?
It is certainly a large city. It is a port city, and it has been promoted as sort of the new Shanghai of the north. And this particular area is a special development zone where they encourage enterprise business. It is a thriving metropolis, and it's very, very important for the Chinese economy in this part of the country.
Fergus Ryan in Tianjin for The Guardian. Fergus, I know it's been a long, chaotic day for the city and for you, but thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
The cause of the blast has yet to be determined, but China has a history of problems with regulations and safety standards not being enforced. The World's Mary Kay Magsad reported from Beijing for us for years. How good are China's safety regulations on paper, Mary Kay?
Well, on paper, they've improved a lot over the past decade. In practice, a lot of local governments feel that it's easier for local enterprises, local companies, if they don't enforce them too stringently, because there's more room for profit. If there's more profit, it looks better for the local officials when they put in to get a promotion.
Yeah. Does the government in Beijing understand that pressure?
Well, they certainly do. But in the middle of an economic slowdown, which China is in right now, the government is concerned about the bottom line. The government is concerned to some degree about the safety of its citizens, but is also concerned about delivering economic growth. And sometimes the signals that go down to the local level are stronger on the first than on the second. Parts of the local government might think that environmental safety standards are being enforced, but people in other departments with a wink and a nod say, you know, we don't really need to do this, or just through neglect, not even through a positive decision, but through just not being very proactive in enforcing the regulations, could let something happen that shouldn't have happened.
How well does all this sit with the ordinary people of China, like the people in Shenzhen who, you know, felt this blast like an earthquake?
Well, obviously, they're horrified. The Chinese population has increasingly become more affluent, better informed, and more desiring of a different kind of relationship with its government over the course of the last, 15 years that I've been, 15, 20 years that I've been either in China or covering China. Up until when this government came into power, when Xi Jinping became president and head of the party, there were increasing demonstrations and protests saying, we don't want these toxic factories or toxic chemicals being kept in warehouses in populated areas. And there was certainly momentum growing. There was a sort of civil society push to hold the government to account. The current government has taken the approach of, we know what's best for you. We will tell you what we feel you need to know. In the case of the Tianjin explosions, the local television stations tried to send out dozens of their own reporters and were told to pull them back because they had to take stories only from Chinese central television run by the central government. And they were outraged. It was like, this is our story. This is happening in our city. We should be able to tell this story. So I think there are a lot of pressure points within Chinese society right now where there are different expectations. The central government, and particularly Xi Jinping, seems to have had the expectation that he could govern the way that his father's generation governed, that Mao Zedong governed. And it's a different population. And when things like this happen, it drives home the chasm between these two different views of what the government should be doing and what it is doing.
Yeah, so do you think this explosion in Shenzhen is going to kind of create more consternation about how people view President Xi Jinping?
Well, it'll be interesting to watch. I mean, part of it is how much information are ordinary Chinese people going to get about this explosion? The government has a long history of limiting, if not completely shutting down, coverage of disasters. If the government doesn't look good, it doesn't want the news going out. But rather than having a mechanism through which there can be investigation and there can be a correction, if a correction needs to be taken, the government feels like, we can do all this ourselves, within our own back rooms, and you, the population, doesn't need to know. Up until this point, a lot of Chinese people have been giving Xi Jinping the benefit of the doubt, at least. And in fact, many people have said, we like the anti-corruption campaign. Maybe he needs to crack some heads and maybe he needs to, sort of take a strong approach to get things in order here. Of course, there are a lot of other people who had been social critics in the past, journalists and academics and lawyers and so forth, who have ended up in prison or who have ended up being silenced in one way or another. They certainly have a different opinion. And when something like this happens, it again calls into question, if you don't have other voices, if you don't have other checks and balances in society, what is the cost to society?
The World's Mary Kay Magstad, thank you.
Thank you, Marco.